Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone. This is Live Events. In the dead of night, when thy winter wounds shall not be healed, in the wind which howls about your being. In the dead of night, when your friends have gone, and you sit huddled by the castle's fire. In the dead of night, when all is dark, who will you be tonight? The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or hosts. We remind all of our listeners, KV at MTOR, ladies and gentlemen, the host calling not.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, madame and messieurs, mes enfants. Welcome to another edition of the Night Zone. Marshall Masters, the master of Planet X information, with us next. Don't go away.
Destiny comes to those who listen, and they find the rest. So learn what you can learn, do what you can do, and never give up hope.
Future, tell the truth, and evaluate each one according to his work and accomplishments. The present is theirs. The future, for which I have really worked, is mine.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. We're in the Night Zone with Colin Knight.
Not much question at all, but there's life throughout that.
Your host, Colin Knight.
And indeed, good evening, everyone. It is Tuesday, August the 3rd, 2010. Special birthday shout-outs to Shannon in Calgary, another year older kiddo. To Wendy from Portland, thank you for your email and your ideas. And Angela in Kansas City, thank you for the info on ghosts. Send me some names of your ghost tour companies. I'd love to interview them. And of course, to the Scottish lass in Calgary, who is fighting a very nasty summer cold. You need a hot rum toddy, girl. Tonight, we have back with us, that sounded cataclysmic, a good friend and top dog of Planet X Forecast, Marshall Masters. Let's try this again, Marshall. Good evening, sir, and welcome to the Shadows.
Wow, it's good to be back. Let's see how long they let us stay on tonight.
Sure. You know, must be something you said, because it's not something I say, that's for sure. But anyway, nope. Marshall, the show title tonight is The Five Stages of Catastrophism. But before we get to that, I want to take on the latest information regarding the Gulf Stream and the stalling of the Gulf Loop current and consequences. What do you make of this?
Well, I think this is a really important story, and what we're doing is reporting on what Dr. Gianluigi, the name is Italian, it's a killer for me, Gianluigi Zangari, and he's a theoretical physicist, a major complex and chaotic systems analyst at the Frascati National Laboratories in Italy. Now, this guy's spent 11 years studying the Gulf and weather currents from six different oceanographic satellites. And what he has seen is that we have a natural system in the Gulf that's millions of years old, but after a couple of million gallons of Corexit, it has stalled. And what we now have in the Gulf of Mexico is a man-made synthetic system that's dysfunctional. And we have the most current update information, which is from the 2nd, showing a comparative of temperatures, where we're comparing August 2nd, 2009 with August 2nd, 2010. And when you look at it, you can clearly see that what's coming out of the Gulf into the Gulf Stream now is cold water.
Mm-hmm.
So this is if this loop current, which is really vital to the system, I mean, it's hard for people to imagine the importance of it, because if you were to take all the currents in the world, you know, and compare them to our intestines, okay, the loop current size-wise is about the size of an appendix, then again, when an appendix bursts, you know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it has long-range implications. There is, this is a situation where we're following it, and at this point, what I'm looking forward to seeing would be other physicists and other systems analysts that are going to jump in and take a look at this same data. Now, we're seeing a lot of debunking articles and a lot of accusation articles, and what they all have in common is none of them are actually looking at the data that Dr. Zangari has presented. And this is public domain data. He is tracking it in from all of this stuff is coming in from national laboratories, NOAA, Rutgers University. I mean, this is all mainstream science.
Right.
So
what kind of a if the Gulf is now pumping cold water into this loop, and it's an unnatural process, what kind of time frame are we looking at, Marshall, for this loop to reform as it was, or as that option gone?
We don't know. There is simply no way. This is unknown country.
Mm-hmm.
Simply put, there is absolutely no way for anyone to. And if anyone were to say, "Well, specifically, this is going to happen, or that is going to happen," all they can do is, you know, couch that. And I'm seeing that coming in from other magazines and whatever. And other experts, alleged experts, and what have you, and they're saying, well, this is, yes, there's a diminishment of the Gulf Stream, but it's probably, they could use the word probably, I can't, but, you know, they go, it's probably a natural cycle, which is the same argument. What I'm seeing are the same classic attacks on this man, and that was really, to be honest with you, that was what drew me to Dr. Zangari's story. I mean, he had published a science paper, it was a peer review quality paper, and where he put the information out there, and he was really hoping to get some feedback from his colleagues, and also to see if there would be follow-up from the media, because he really sees something that concerns him deeply. And what happened was he was completely shut down by the media in Italy. They wouldn't even consider it. What you have to keep in mind is that there is ongoing censure of these kind of catastrophism topics. We have a book, Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide, and it has been licensed in other countries, Germany, Japan, and Italy. Odd that it's in former Axis countries.
Yeah.
And we are finding very brisk sales in Germany and Japan. The topic is more popular than people would think, even though there's a lot of angry debunking and name-calling. People are drawn to the topic. Not in Italy anymore. What happened was our book, and we were not singled out. Other publishers reporting and publishing on the same topic, all of our books were pulled off the shelves. And we were doing well enough in Italy that our publishers, Academia, there is the name of the company, reported that we were actually on the end caps in the bookstores. You don't get end caps unless you're, you know, you're doing numbers.
Right.
Well, it was all pulled, and then what happened was that after the books were pulled off the shelves, a whole new group of so-called Planet X and 2012 experts materialized out of nowhere, and the difference between these new experts and us is twofold. One, what they're saying is 180 degrees the other direction, and two is they have something we never have. They have unfettered access to mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You can interpret that however you want.
Right.
So, there is this suppression of information, and it's an ongoing thing. And so you just deal with it. That's all. You just deal with it.
So given that, like, who is the one, who is doing all of the shutdown. As you know, we had trouble on the 8 o'clock time slot tonight, on the 10 o'clock Eastern time slot tonight. We couldn't get the show up and running, and we had to sneak in the back door to do this show tonight. And who is doing all of this, do you think, Marshall? Is this New World Order? Is this Illuminati?
These are whoever's doing it has a lot of horsepower. Okay. I mean, let me put it to you this way. When I put up this story, I did it, you know, Sunday morning at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for a reason. Okay. You know, let it get a little viral popper, let it get viral before they start stomping on it.
Exactly.
And,
get a few hours head start on them.
Yeah, I mean, these guys like to do barbecue on Sunday, too, you know?
Yeah.
So after we did that, I sent off a notice to CNN, to their newsroom. And now, CNN, then they didn't publish on it, but what they did I thought was interesting was they floated a trial balloon, and the following morning I saw, I believe it was Wolf Blitzer, say, has there been an overuse of Corexit in the Gulf? Mm-hmm. Which is actually a pretty intelligent way of coming at this initially.
Right.
By the end of the day, the White House, nonetheless, came back and they reported that the White House said that BP had followed the procedures for what it was allowed to do.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So now, what you have here is the world's largest government and the world's largest oil company.
Right.
Right. There's a lot at stake. If you're saying, "Hey, look, you guys pumped nearly 2 million gallons of Corexit into the Gulf, and now the loop current is stalled," that's culpability. Nobody wants that. If you have a lot at stake like they do, so. Yeah, I mean, you know, the reason why your show was interrupted is, I don't think, frankly, I don't think it was Blog Talk messing with you. I think Blog Talk just all of a sudden, boom,
lost it.
Took a hit. Not that they would confirm that to you, because there'd be consequences to that as well.
Yeah.
That's
now,
how these things happen.
True. And now, this stalled loop current, if this current stays stalled, the write-up said that you could start to see global crop failures as early as 2011. Is this very much like the movie that Art Bell penned?
He did a book called, Global Superstorm,
right?
And which was very much like The Day After Tomorrow.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, I put the movie cover up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing about The Day After Tomorrow was that scientists, meteorologists, climatologists, while they said, it's Hollywood-esque science, they nonetheless really just had to begrudgingly admit that there was some validity to the scenario.
Right.
It just was something that was highly accelerated. But keep in mind, we're dealing with systems that are millions of years old. There's for them to say, I don't think it's going to happen, they're pulling it out of their butt.
Right.
How do they know? It's millions of years old. How can anybody know where this is going to go?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at the article, what I would tell your readers is if they look at the article, I think, Dr. Zangari probably, if he hasn't been silenced by now, it'll happen soon. But the last thing I got from him was a temperature comparison, and he was comparing July 20, 2009 to July 29, 2010, which is what we had in the first one. And that is a concern enough. You see a pattern emerging there. But we added an update on August 2nd with a new comparison of August 2, 2009 versus August 2, 2010. And when you look at that, you don't need someone to explain it to you. What you clearly see is cold water now, instead of warm water, is coming out of the Gulf around Mexico and heading towards the base of the Gulf Stream.
Right.
So the big question right now is, all right, and the reason why I called it a stall when I wrote the article is we're dealing in unknowns.
Right.
And so this could be a stall where the natural forces, and the Earth has a tremendous amount of ability to, you know, to correct things, mm-hmm. to restore very old systems. And so if this is temporarily stalled, then it's a matter of saying, well, okay, let's just wait to see what happens, and that's really all we can do. But you know, when I compare there's these two temperature comparisons on the article now, and you look at them in just something that's from a period of days, it's gut-wrenching. I mean, you know, I looked at that and I went, my God, well, this is going to be turned into the second law of thermodynamics, entropy. Systems normally become chaotic and fail. And, you know, what are the implications here? So there is, and I'm following things pretty much, and I see a lot of people are picking up on it. This is very viral now. This article is the most successful article we've ever published on Yowza to date, period. Nothing has ever
taken off. Let me just interrupt this. For those listening live and those that are down in our virtual studio, we do appreciate you coming back in the virtual studio, by the way. Go to Yowza.com, YOWUSA.com, and have a look at this article that Marshall and I are discussing. There are graphs there. These are not Marshall's graphs. These are government scientific graphs that have been sent to him, and they're, you know, perfectly legitimate graphs. And I did check it out this afternoon, Marshall, before we went to the on air. Do you think the severity of the China leak has any coincidence to this? Are they impacting their ocean tides and currents?
Well, no, that was a leak. It was very short, quickly contained, and they're working hard to clean it up. But I don't think that has anything to do with this. I mean, this is something where the loop current is really an integral part of the global system of conveyors in the ocean.
Right.
Of the world. So, I mean, this is, yeah, I mean, the guy calls it the engine. So, I mean, it's small, but it has a very critical role. In my mind, again, it's like an appendix, you know, and so what? It's this little itty-bitty thing. But when it bursts, that's it. You don't, you know, you go get someone to take out the mess pretty fast. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get your affairs in order, like,
right.
Quick.
Yeah.
So that's what we're looking at here. Now, what saddens me is that the kind of attacks that I'm seeing on this man, and it was really what drew me to the work. You have to understand, I'm very good at following disinformation on the web. People think it's a lot of free speech, a lot of cranks, a lot of this. No, there's that. I call that all organic traffic, but then there's synthetic traffic.
Yes.
And what the synthetic traffic really is are disinformationals. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of money and organization in going into all kinds of any community site, chat rooms, message boards, blogs, anywhere they can get in and disrupt a conversation and to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, you know, what is completely too subtle, so therefore it's oblivious to other people. To me, it's just as clear as being out in the middle of the desert and you see the buzzards circling off, you know, a little while. And when you see the buzzards circling, which are the disinformation operatives, when they're circling, you go, look. Now, you don't always find something really interesting, but sometimes you find something really good. And I was seeing the attacks on the man's work, and that was immediately what drew me to it, because the disinformationalists do not go after stupids.
Right.
They go after somebody that's got a really serious message. That is something that vested interests do not want to come out.
Well, I feel somewhat vindicated then by the problems we had bringing this show to air tonight, to be honest with you, because, you know, it is clear that the hand of someone slapped down the system tonight.
Oh, that was really clear. You got the, I mean, they pulled the plug on the whole
we should.
They pulled the plug on your network. I mean, it wasn't just your show, but when I was hearing that there are no shows scheduled for 26 hours, I'm going, that's it, man.
Yeah.
These guys just got hammered.
Yeah.
What they're really doing is they just simply wanted to go and kill your regular audience for that time slot. So these people just move on. So whoever's out there, hey, man, you know, thank you for sticking around. But, you know, you have to remember, Colin, that these kinds of attacks are done in a way that gives them plausible deniability. They can always go, oh, gosh, you know, it was a gizmo, a gadget, a this or that. But I've been playing this game for a decade. And, you know, I know the old story, and I knew it was happening to you.
Right. We will keep an eye on this story, Marshall, and hopefully you'll keep me apprised of it so we can do a follow-up show on it. But what about this this little sun fart on Sunday? Now, how is that going?
Sun fart. I love it. Russians feel that way about it.
Yeah, really. Now, how serious is this going to be when it hits? Apparently, it hits tonight. We should be able to see Aurora Borealis tonight.
Well, I mean, it hits at night for us, which means it's not going to be so good for daytime elsewhere.
Yeah.
True. All right. So we have to see how that's going to play out. I think that this is going to be, you know, what we want to start looking for is this part of an initial cycle?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the frequency of this? But, I mean, it is a... It's a major solar storm. It's the thing that in our book, Planet X Forecast, we said right from the outset that the number one threat to life on the planet in the 2012 and post-2012 timeframe will be solar radiation.
Right.
And so for your listeners out there, a solar storm, it's a 1-2 punch. And the first punch is radiation. And that is going to get here literally at the speed of light. There's no way you can prepare for that.
Right.
But then the coronal mass ejection will come within a matter of hours afterwards, say usually about an 18-hour period of time. And, you know, the thing is, it can either be a pretty light show or it could be something that starts punching through the ozone. And it starts punching through the ozone, it's not going to be a pretty light show.
Yeah.
So it's seeing how this goes. I mean, you know, when I'm looking at the reporting on it, it reminds me back when the BP or the volcano, excuse me, in Iceland erupted. And the news entertainer on CNN, there are no more reporters.
Right.
But the news entertainer was his first take on it, and he says, oh, wow, this is going to be great. We're going to have beautiful sunsets. That was how he started talking about it. We're going to have beautiful sunsets. And then what happened? Beautiful sunsets turned into, you know, thousands of flights canceled and air traffic in the North Atlantic, you know, gutted like a fish.
Right.
All right. So they used these dismissive terms so that people, you know, don't get alarmed. How effective is it? It's pretty effective. Most people really do get sucked in by it because they want to.
Right.
They really don't want to think about this.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, disinformation does not work when people are skeptical, when they're being good skeptics, when they're looking at it and they're, you know, saying, all right, well, you know, let's see your bona fides.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to believe whatever message is being pumped out, then there's, you know, if I put out a message, all of a sudden, oh, my gosh, there's all kinds of tests of credibility.
Mm-hmm.
But if a disinformationalist wants to pump out something and people want to hear that,
right.
Doesn't matter why. If they want to hear it, it goes without question.
They get a mainline. Yeah. Oh. I can see that. I can see that happening on a daily basis, watching the news on all broadcasts. I have a big thing about mainstream media. They're pumping out what is is expected to the people. They're not telling the truth. And it's about time we got some of the old reporters back to tell the truth to the American people and to the people of the world, because some of this stuff they're pumping out, and they're minimalizing it, and it cannot be minimalized. I have Dr. Ian O'Neill coming on the 24th. He's a solar physicist, and he's going to talk to us about the sun and the solar flares and what have you. But is this going to affect computers and electricity and the likes?
Well, this is the kind of stuff that can take out power grids, computers, electronics. This can cause a whole lot of grief out there. And for your listeners, some basic things that you can do is, in terms of if you want to protect your electronics, is you can make a homemade Faraday cage, you know, like a metal trash can with lid, as long as it, you get a complete metal enclosure. And the best to use really is, and it's a little expensive, you can get it at the hardware store, is a copper mesh. What you want to make sure is whatever you're going to, let's say, for example, you want to make sure you have a laptop that's going to survive a solar storm.
Right.
Take your laptop, remove the battery, all right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's also good to do is when you set it aside, you can get yourself what's called an inverter. You get the kind that are the 12-volt inverters you can use in a car battery, and then you can get a clip that'll take that 12-volt cigarette lighter, and then it'll give you two little battery clips like a jumper cable. And you can put that together for about $35, $40. Now, you have that. What's really important is once you remove the battery from the laptop and you have your inverter, so you can take power off of a car battery, is that you make sure that you wrap it with something, you know, like that plastic pop stuff that we get. Mm-hmm. It has to be something that's not going to be conducting. If the computer is actually in contact with the Faraday cage, you lose the benefit of the Faraday cage. Mm-hmm. So what you want to do is you make sure it's wrapped in just plastic, cardboard, wood, whatever you're going to do, and then the mesh goes around that and make sure that the mesh is completely sealed all the way around, doesn't have any open ends. And then that is going to give you some protection. And the reason why I prefer copper meshes, that's if you look at the military specifications, you know, the military uses a copper mesh. And that is something that your folks out there can do and make it at home with usually with what you have on hand. So if you're seeing this and you want to make sure that your electronics, your cell phones, your laptops, your, you know, your iPhones, web pads, this stuff can go, that's all you have to do is make sure you have a completely enclosed metal, all right, and inside that something to insulate it, non-conducting, and always remember to remove the batteries from the devices.
Okay, great. You hang on to that thought, and everybody out there, hopefully you wrote down those little notes. It is important. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Marshall, let's get into the five stages of catastrophism.
Yes.
All righty.
Tonight, in the shadows of the Night Zone, Marshall Masters. Phone lines are open. Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. Aviate Mtor.
A basic conclusion of my writings has been that those who gave mankind civilization were visitors to Earth from another planet. If I say extraterrestrials, it's a dirty word, but that's what they were.
You are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com.
The ancient Sumerian text, just in a very broad overview, basically tell us that these Anunnaki came from space and landed on the Earth in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. They began to set up a colony that they called Eden.
Tonight, Unplugged with Marshall Masters. In the early 1990s, the United States Naval Observatory confirmed the orbital agitation of Pluto and various planets, calculating that a 10th planet would have to be 2 to 5 times the size of Earth, and performing an elliptical orbit would extend some 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto. This would be an elliptical orbit maintaining gravitational pull on our entire planetary system. So, is Planet X so far out there we can't see it? We certainly can and have measured the gravitational pull it exerts on the planetary systems, and we've known this since 1930s. Tonight, we have with us an old friend and author of Planet X Information, host of Cut to the Chase,
Marshall Masters.
Destiny comes to those who listen, and fate finds the rest.
Okay.
So learn what you can learn, do what you can do, and never give up hope.
Marshall Masters. Your host, Colin Knight.
And we do indeed have with us tonight Marshall Masters, the father, if you will, of Planet X Forecast and the Colburn Bible. And we have had some difficulties getting this show to air, but we are at air with 29 minutes to go. I was asked last week, Marshall, at a speaking engagement, why I care so much about such nonsense. And I had a hard time answering it, but now I know that that's...
You know, excuse me, could you give me that question again?
Yeah, why I care so much about such nonsense.
Oh, that's like one of those, are you still beating your wife questions?
Exactly. You know, but it was obvious that these people were at stage one of the five steps. So how about filling us in on these five stages of catastrophism?
Okay. Oh, by the way, if you want a response to that,
yeah,
next time you get that question, my standard response on that is, look, you know, the work that we do is about global catastrophe. So, which means that a lot of people have to die. And the folks that are the most likely to do the bulk of the dying are the ones who never see it coming. And they don't see it coming because either they're not informed or they choose not to be informed. And you've chosen not to be informed. And so thank you for standing up and volunteering to be one of the first to fall.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good answer. Yeah.
And, you know, then at that, you can just say, another intelligent question, please.
There you go. So the five stages, my friend.
The five stages of catastrophism, and it's, I first did this in my book, Planet X Forecast, and actually over the years, I just have used it time and again to help people and to deal with this, because they get into awareness, and it is... it's a gut-wrenching experience. Nobody comes to this topic willingly. We all walk backwards into it. You know, something one day catches your eye, and what really happens, and what I say in the video, is that you have to do one of two things. You're going to say, well, now, and you just move on, because you sense it's deep and it's dark, and it's troubling. And if you really don't want to deal with something like that, then you do what 98% of the people do. You just walk away from it.
Right.
Then the people that look at it and ask themselves one simple little question are the ones that enter into awareness. And that question is, what am I looking at? Now, the minute you say, what am I looking at? What you're doing is, you are taking responsibility for your own knowledge. Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing. And that's really important, because the only truth that really matters is the truth that resonates within you. And the only way that can happen is if you put it there, not if somebody else puts it there. Right. You have to be the one to put that truth there. And most folks just don't want to do that. They'd rather just, you know, go to Kmart, find the blue plate, you know, get the blue light special, and there you go.
Right.
And that's just the way it is. That's the way our society is. But for those folks that get into it, you have these different stages. And when you're in awareness, it's stage one is you make that decision.
Right.
Stage two is the impact really hits you. You're looking at it, and you know, stage two begins when you say to yourself, am I nuts? Mm-hmm. And stage two ends when you say to yourself, I'm not nuts. I'm seeing something here. I trust my own perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And you get into the third stage, and in the third stage is where you want to sound the alarms.
Right.
Of the five stages of catastrophism, this is the one that is the most brutal. Brutal for people, because they are, it's an act of love. You know, if there's a problem, you go to the people you care about, your friend, your family, your inner circle, and you're going, I'm seeing something here. It's really terribly bothering. What they don't understand is for them it's bothering. For everybody else, they're going, I don't have time for this crap.
Right.
Okay? They're saying, what they're doing is that they're responding to those people in stage three the same way you got that question. Why do you believe in this nonsense?
Right.
All right. All that is bluster and ego and self-defense. It's fear.
Right.
It actually is, it's fear. You can smell it. Okay?
Right.
And, when I see that, and sometimes when I see that and I look at people and I go, what are you afraid of? Oh, I'm not afraid of anything. I just keep pressing. What are you afraid of? And I keep pressing until I get an honest answer. Usually, they'll walk away. All right? Because they don't want to address that. But sometimes they do. And, it's something where then you do take them into awareness. And I don't do that anymore. I've done it before because my philosophy is that this knowledge is something you do not evangelize it. You do not proselytize it. You do not push it on other people. Everyone has to come to awareness in their own way and in their own time. And over time, they will. Most of them. All right? I call it the popcorn people effect. Just like when I was a kid, mom would get the old pot out, put it on the stove, put some oil and some corn in it. This was the days before microwaves. And, if you get it hot, start shaking it on the stove. And, oh, God, I used to love sitting there and listening because you'd hear the corn going pop, pop, pop. And those first ones, the big, fluffy guys, you want to get them.
Mm-hmm.
But then you just go pop, 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 all of a sudden. And finally, afterwards, there were going to be some kernels on the bottom of the pot. You could nuke them. Or cook them until they were, diamonds or coal.
Right.
They were never going to pop. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Well, the people coming into awareness is the same way. And so what you really have to do is once you get into this, you have to understand this, particularly going into the fourth and fifth stages. And in the fourth stage, you have to say, all right, I'm willing to be alone, to stand alone in my knowing. Not that you have to. You can find others that are in the same situation as you, and it's going to be a very warm, nurturing environment for you. And I've created that with my PlanetXTownHall.com message board.
Right.
And it's a free community, very strict enrollment, but once you're in, there's unmoderated hosting. And I really want people to have a compassionate and an intelligent discussion of these issues, and that's what we have. And so I really spend more of my effort on just keeping out the flakes and the disinformationalists and the run-by-fruiters.
Right.
And so it's a good community. But it's something where it's, like I said, I have to do that. You just, imagine you have a tumbler of clear water. All you have to do is put one drop of ink in it. And what have you got? Yuck. So that's what these negative voices can do. So for the folks out there that are, they're at that point where they're saying, what am I looking at? Or more importantly, for those of you out there that, your husbands or wives are saying, why do you believe in this nonsense? Well, that's who I made this video for, to explain to you what you're going through, what the process is, and how once you've achieved stage five, it's not going to make is any better in terms of what we have to deal with. But it's going to give you a sense of inner peace because you're going to have a more healthy response to it. You're going to see things. You're not going to see events as something that happened to you against your will, or something you will happen against it, which is what we always want to do. And we say, that's it, you know, and the last thing, can we nuke it, you know? And no, this is a problem we can't nuke. But what you really understand in stage five, you're part of it. Okay, you're part of what's happening. And then once you understand that, you're like a leaf in the stream. But you can navigate your way around the rocks and so forth. And that's really what you're doing. And so, you know, this is something that it's a 29-minute program on YouTube. It's in high definition. You can watch it 1080p. And but mostly I put it out there for the people I see really getting hurt the most, Colin. And those are the ones that are just trying to tell their loved ones about it. And just getting, you know, being ostracized within their own personal network of family and friends. And it's really, you know, it's not beneficial to the friends, and it's not beneficial to them. When you are telling somebody about this information and they're not ready to go into awareness, what you're doing is you're pushing them to do something they're not inclined to do, which is going to make them even more resistant. You're going to build more resistance. And so what you will do is by trying to push it at them, you're actually going to make it take longer for that person to come into awareness as opposed to just leaving them be.
Right.
Let them, if they know what it is that you're doing, but you don't put it in their face, you know, like the Chinese saying goes, you know, the student will find the teacher, or the teacher finds the student.
Now, you have a book going back a little ways, God's Child Covenant, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
That one, I think, would be a good aid for people to understand what's going on with these five stages of catastrophism, don't you think?
I think, yeah, it would be a good way to do it. God's Child Covenant, Return of Nibiru, and I wrote this in 2002, and I find it interesting. I had made predictions about the future. And then, you know, which automatically dates you. But one of the things I had predicted in the book was that we'd have web pads for the iPads or the black pad that'll come from BlackBerry. So these types of devices. I was predicting cars that could drive themselves. And we have that in part, cars that'll park themselves. And, you know, but it was the whole story, and it's a wonderful, wonderful, beautiful love story. It's a wonderful, beautiful love story. But it really is taking a fiction-based-on-fact look at one of the scenarios that we were seeing, and it was probably one of the least severe scenarios for a possible flyby of Nibiru, Planet X, in the 2012 timeframe. Now, you know, what we've been telling people and always have is that, in our opinion, 2012 is, if you know, you compare it to a rock concert, 2012 is the warm-up band. You know what's going to, you know the big act's coming, but the big act is going to happen in 2013 or later.
Okay.
And so it's really, for folks that really are, you know, trying to look at their chronographs and go, okay, where is it, where is it? You're dealing with an object. Planet X is in a long period orbit, and it's in a comet-like orbit. It's perpendicular. You know, if you imagine all the planets, if you will, orbiting from east to west, for example, and, you know, this is a north-south.
Okay.
Or, you know, west to east and
right.
south to north, but it's perpendicular to everything else. And so it makes it inherently unstable. And there is no way to accurately predict exactly where it's going to be at any one time. Even if it were possible to take all of the computers in the world and hook them together in one huge cloud computer,
right?
All right, we still wouldn't have enough processing power to calculate all of it. It's because it is just so unstable. So we just have to see what we see. You know, we do have a video that has the various different flyby scenarios.
Right.
And that is a real key thing. In other words, you know, when it comes through the core of the system, it comes through the ecliptic, which is the plane of our solar system. A good way to imagine it is begin with a point in the center of the sun and form a concentric ring all the way out through the planets and moons to the 12 signs of the zodiac. That's the ecliptic.
Right.
And so this object is coming in sharply from the south, and that's the reason why people are saying, why can't we see it? Well, it's what folks do not understand is, first off, 90% of all observations are done at or near the ecliptic, and that of the other 10%, about 3% is in the southern hemisphere and 7% is in the northern hemisphere. And this object right now, where we're estimating the orbit, is only going to be visible from Antarctica, and then, you know, eventually it'll become visible from the southern tip of New Zealand, Tasmania, you know, Chile. These kinds of places would see it. So, and then for amateur astronomers to pick up on it, because it's not in visible light spectrum right now, you know, it has to be inside the orbit of Jupiter for that to happen. So while everyone's busy looking at their chronograph, you know, and reading their train schedules, this object is doing that. And plus, it's also passing through a very dense star field right now. So it's like, imagine you're going to a candlelight vigil with a million people standing there, and you want to pick out just one candle amongst those thousands of candles. Okay? That's how difficult it is to isolate it.
Now, so, when the South observatories do pick up Nibiru, how long before it will be obvious to everybody? We're talking about a month, 3 months. Once we spot the light source, how long before we are confirming?
Well, first off, they're not going to announce this until it is imminently visible with the naked eye.
Okay.
And then after that, you're going to have an announcement. What people have to understand is that NASA already controls what's being reported. And for those of you that are, you know, good old silverbacks like us, and going back to the 90s, if you can think back, and we used to get stories, particularly out of the tabloids in England, where they would say asteroid could hit the Earth in 12 years and kill half the population.
Right.
All right. Great for selling newspapers.
Right.
And what they were doing is they were picking up on the reports from the astronomers who were, they would, you know, observe an object, do a rough calculation on it, and then that would get the attention of other astronomers. And, you know, the whole point of it is that you build a whole series of observations from as many different people as you can. All of this information is fed into the computers, and then they refine the ephemeris. The ephemeris is, it's really kind of like a train or a plane schedule, if you will, for these objects in space so that we know at any one given time where they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And as these ephemeris are developed for an object, what they find is that the likelihood of an impact becomes either extremely negligible or, you know, none at all.
Right.
But in the meantime, folks are selling newspapers. Well, NASA was really annoyed with all this, and so what happens is now they have a policy, and I learned about this from the Smithsonian, okay, the top guy at the Smithsonian. He was really miffed about this. They have a lid on this. You cannot announce something like this, an Earth-crossing object,
right.
All right? Any object that is going to cross the orbit of Earth or come anywhere near it, all right? You cannot announce it until NASA blesses the announcement. They made themselves the gatekeepers of science. So how did this play out? Well, if you look back at the 90s and look back at the last decade, in the 90s, the tabloids were selling us newspapers. You know, rocks going to hit the Earth, kill a bunch of people. Now, what do we see from stories? You know, this rock came within pretty close to Earth 3 days ago.
Yeah, 360,000 miles distance.
Right, right. And so, Yeah, and so what happens is this is all manipulated and controlled information. It's already there. It's very, very well in place. It's run with an iron fist, and that's the way it is. Now, how is it that NASA can be the one to do this, to control all of these astronomical reports around the globe? Well, we're the number one funders of science.
Right.
And science today, it's not like science of the past. You know, when you think of the Madame Curies and these folks, for them, science was, gosh, it was a calling, if you would, all right? For the same reason people become nurses, okay? There's just a passion to it.
Right.
But now it's a paid profession. And, you know, yeah, you have to do your science, but at the same time, you have to be mindful of the fact that you need to elbow your way to the funding trough.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to get to the funding trough if the guys who have control of the funds are not particularly enamored with what you're doing or talking about.
Right.
And so science today, you know, the notion that science is free and unfettered, no, it's very much a case where science now has got to serve business political interests, power interests, you know, because it depends on these very interests for its funding. And that's just the reality of what we have today.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's unfortunate, but, you know, there it is.
So given that, the chances that we would be given enough grace to understand what's coming at us would be slim to non-existent.
Precisely. If your listeners really want to understand how this stuff really works, you know, I mean, there's this it's this insane leap of faith thing that goes on. It really, you ask people, do you trust your governments? Do you implicitly trust them to be honest with you about things? You know, if you find one, all right, that actually says that, you know, either they've got something under the table to say that, or, you know, they're probably just bought a bottle of Muscatel 2010 last week.
Right.
The fact is, you ask these same people about this, and they would say, well, they're going to lie to us about all of these other things. What about something as big as this? No, they can't lie. See, they want to believe that all of a sudden governments and corporations that demonstrate, you know, a repulsion of integrity,
right,
are suddenly going to mysteriously do something different. You know, it's like, okay, if that floats your boat, that floats your boat.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the movie 2012 and you rent it, and when you see it, if you haven't seen it the first time around, yeah, you're going to enjoy the eye candy. It's designed to, they have a Hollywood scenario that helps you disassociate from what you're seeing so that it does become entertainment and engaging. But, you know, and sit through that and enjoy it. Then watch it a second time, and even a third time if you need, except this time you look for the subtext. And the subtext is how the elites and how the governments manipulate everyone in the film so that, you know, most of the people in the world, with small exception, do not know what's killing them until they're already dying.
Yeah.
That's the goal here, all right, is to make sure people don't know. Now, when is Planet X going to be reported? Like I said, just before it's visible to the naked eye. And that gives them an additional cushion time, because now then you have the I don't want to believe my lying eyes syndrome. And even if you can see it, you don't want to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
They have that buys them a little more time. And I think that probably the official announcement, you know, put that in huge quotes, will be Project Learmouth, the Wormwood Project in the northwest tip of Australia. And they are a space threat effort. They use infrared, which is for the kind of objects we're talking about, is going to be really the ideal way to spot it.
Right.
And we'll see Project Wormwood declare it. And usually in an observatory or the astronomer, you might have the name of the observatory or the group that the astronomer works with or, you know, some combination of that. And that's how these objects are going to be named. So
Marshall, we're getting a lot of, quite a bit of Twitter action going here, and also down in our virtual studio, asking for the elliptical orbits and what have you. The best thing to do for those people out there is go to yowza.com, YOWUSA.com. Have a look at Marshall's information. You will see all of the videos that are available, and they'll link you to YouTube so you can have a look at these videos and the various scenarios that Marshall and his group have put together, and you'd be able to kind of extrapolate from that what we're talking about this southern incoming, why it is not...
You know, if you get to the site, there'll be in the menu bar,
right,
videos. If you go down to videos, what you want to see is Planet X Special Report, and the first one that we did is literally called Where is Planet X? All right, because that's the question is people are asking. And what I do is all of these questions that you would get that you're seeing in the Twitter, I lay it all out step by step, and I do it in a way so that folks in the mainstream can understand it.
Exactly.
And that's a good place to start right there. So where is Planet X? Planet X Special Report number one, and then also the five stages of catastrophism.
Exactly. Marshall, again, we're out of time. We managed to get through an hour, and they never blocked us. So we must have done it right this time.
Must have.
Marshall, it's been an absolute pleasure, sir. I really appreciate your time and your patience in being able to get us to air with your information.
It's always a pleasure, Colin.
And we'll talk to you again, Marshall. Ladies and gentlemen, Marshall Masters from the Planet X Forecast. Absolutely amazing stuff. You got to go to his website, www.youwusa.com. And have a look at that. You'll be absolutely amazed. The videos are up there. All the information is there for you to make that determination regarding Planet X, the trajectory, how it is coming into our system, and exactly the different scenarios of a close flyby, a distant flyby, a cataclysmic hit, and the likes. And also make sure you check out the new video that just released yesterday, I believe it was, The Five Stages of Catastrophism. You'll enjoy that one. That's a very, very interesting video. It's 29 minutes. And you get to see Marshall Masters walking around some beautiful countryside. So make sure you check those out. We'll be back next week. Hopefully we'll be back and firing on all cylinders back into our usual time slot at 10 p.m. Eastern time on a Tuesday night. It's been an absolute pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, madame and messieurs, that's it. That's all. Good night now. Hey, Night Zoners, got a minute? I'm sure we all know someone who is experiencing difficult times during this recession, either with unemployment or financial problems, or in relationships. I have friends like that. I would like to remind you that we are all in this together. So if you have friends experiencing hardships, support them with your advice. If you have acquaintances who are having rough times, nurture them with your friendship. Show them kindness. If you have family members who are having difficulties, show them your love. And if you have people in your life who have almost given up, throw them a lifeline of kindness. Remember the golden rule, but for the grace of God, go I. Blessings upon your household. Until then, next time we meet.
This has been a Night Zone production in association with BlogTalkRadio.com.